Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa buddham dhammam sangham namassami. This is the Kosala Sutta, the Anguttara Nikaya, 49 in the Book of Fives. Bhikkhus, there are these five situations that are unobtainable by an ascetic or a Brahmin, by a Deva, Mara, or Brahma, or by anyone in the world. What five? 1. May what is subject to old age not grow old. This is a situation that is unobtainable by an ascetic or a Brahmin, by a Deva, Mara, or Brahma, or by anyone in the world. 2. May what is subject to illness not fall ill. 3. May what is subject to death not die. 4. May what is subject to destruction not be destroyed. And the 5th is, may what is subject to loss not be lost. This is a situation that is unobtainable by an ascetic, Brahmin, by a Deva, Mara, or Brahma, or by anyone in the world. For the uninstructed worldling, what is subject to old age grows old. What is subject to illness falls ill. What is subject to death dies. What is subject to destruction is destroyed. What is subject to loss is lost. When this happens, one does not reflect thus. I am not the only one for whom what is subject to old age grows old. For all beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, what is subject to old age grows old. If I were to sorrow, languish, lament, weep, and become confused when what is subject to old age grows old, I would lose my appetite and my features would become ugly. I would not be able to do my work. My enemies would be elated, and my friends would become saddened. For the uninstructed worldling, what is subject to old age grows old. What is subject to loss is lost. When this happens, one does not reflect thus. I am not the only one for whom what is subject to old age grows old. For all beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, what is subject to old age grows old. If I were to sorrow, languish, lament, weep, and become confused when what is subject to old age grows old, I would lose my appetite and my features would become ugly. I would not be able to do my work. My enemies would be elated, and my friends would become saddened. Thus, when what is subject to old age grows old, he sorrows, languishes, laments, weeps, and becomes confused. This is called an uninstructed worldling, pierced by the poisonous dart of sorrow, who only torments himself. So the Buddha is giving us important advice here. But if we don't reflect in this way, that what is subject to old age grows old and is subject to all the suffering of this realm, to illness, to death, to destruction, and to loss, then we will also end up like this uninstructed worldling who becomes poisoned by the dart of sorrow and only torments himself. But the Buddha describes the opposite. For the instructed worldling, what is subject to old age grows old. When this happens, he reflects thus, I am not the only one for whom what is subject to old age grows old. This happens to all beings. Everyone who is born into this realm is subject to old age and is subject to all the suffering of this realm. Any time that we wish that we were not subject to old age, not subject to death, not subject to sickness, not subject to destruction, not subject to loss, then we will languish if we reflect wrongly. But if we reflect rightly, then we don't sorrow, languish, lament, weep, wailing, becoming confused. This is called an instructed noble disciple who has drawn out the poisonous dart of sorrow. Sorrowless, the instructed noble disciple realizes nibbana. So when one is without sorrow, then one realizes the ending of suffering. Even if the body is subject to old age, sickness and death, destruction and loss. But the mind is not. The mind is free. The mind does not get lost in sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, despair, self-torment. So by reflecting in this way, we don't take it personally. We don't identify with the body. We don't allow ourselves to be pierced by this poisonous dart of sorrow. The mind rises above the world to realize the deathless. The Buddha gives a beautiful verse. It is not by sorrowing and lamenting that even the least good can be gained here. But it hurts. So what is it that hurts? What is it that we feel that is so unbearable? If we actually stop to feel the feeling of sorrow, the heaviness of sorrow, if the mind can use sorrow as an object of meditation, what happens by contemplating the body? This is such a wonderful exercise. Many of us, when we're verbally assaulted or we verbally attack ourselves, self-denigration, at these times we are subject to an enslavement to this concept of self, which is in fact an idea because this self is non-existent. But if we are able to really use the feeling of sorrow, what does sorrow feel like? Is it heavy? Is it tight? Is it dark? What does the body feel like? So in paying attention to this feeling of sorrow, this is not ownership. We're not, oh, this is my sorrow. We're not doing that. We just feel it. We feel the body. We feel feeling. The breath is not stable? Are we too agitated? Are we holding our breath? Is our brow furrowed? To feel the structure, the posture of the body, and to hold it straight, hold it up, and to breathe well, to give ourselves a little bit of space, make the body into this big field of energy, into which this sorrow can arise and cease, like the breath. Arise and cease. We make the sorrow into bread, and you have a dough. and you're needing it, and you're taking the name sorrow out of it, because in the act of needing it, the mind has already forgotten this label of sorrow, because now we're feeling it, we're needing it. What does it feel like? Well, it's not that stiff anymore. It's not that heavy anymore. It has a bigger space. It's not just an idea. Because we're in the body, we're entering a wider field and we're knowing the sorrow through our whole body, body sensation, field of energy. And we're working with it. We're spreading it apart. It becomes sati, and it's right mindfulness, right attention, and right understanding. It's no longer tight, it's no longer poor me, woe is me. We've dropped the idea of self, and we have a bit of freedom. And our breath is better. Maybe our posture has stretched, because we've given ourselves space. We've allowed ourselves to be fully conscious of this field of energy in the present moment. We're not in the head. This is a moment of sorrowlessness. It's sati. Not sorrow, but it's sati. This is good. Now we go to the contemplation of the feeling. What is the sensation that we feel now? Is it pleasant? Is it painful? Well, maybe it's not so painful anymore because the brow is no longer furrowed. We're not up here. We're in the heart more. We've opened. We're tasting it. What is it? It's a moment of breath and the idea of sorrow is gone. So we have no pain or less pain, or we have the ability to be with what is and not freak out. We're just there. So we practice like this again and again, and little by little, using mindfulness and the contemplation of the five aggregates of forms, feelings, perceptions, mental formations and consciousness, we can work our way out of this trap, this enslavement to sorrow. We have sorrowlessness. We can do the same thing with grief, grieving. Because grieving that we do continuously is like a prison. But when we practice mindfulness continuously, it's a freedom. It's just the opposite. So it's not an ordinary mindfulness, but it's mindfulness with wisdom. Now, if we come to mindfulness of the mind, this is really important. Mindfulness of the mind is awareness. What is this consciousness that knows the object, that breathes deeply, that is not devastated by an idea, but is just present moment awareness? Consciousness that becomes stable. It's not agitated. It becomes concentrated. It's notable. The mental formations are cooled. If you have a heavy bag and you're carrying that bag and you think, this bag is really heavy, but I'm just going to carry it into the parking lot. How come you can carry that heavy bag? It's too heavy, but you've made a determination in your mind that you're going to get it to a particular place. So while you make that determination in your mind, the intention to carry it there, you forget about the heaviness. And in fact, the mind intending towards that makes it doable. But sometimes the negative mind state is so overwhelming And we think we have to knock it down, but it's overwhelming, so we can't. And then we give in to it. We don't want to, but if we were to meet a dragon, you can't face the dragon head on because it'll get you with its tail. So you have to trick it somehow. In the same way, when we're being overwhelmed by a negative mind state, we may not be able to slay the dragon head on. So even the heaviest sorrow, if we make an intention, we suddenly find that it wasn't hard, that we did it. So then we keep making that intention, intending to be aware. It's like intending to get to the next breath. That's all. I can do that. But you can get a little space. So we make realizable goals in the way we carry our burden. Whether it's very painful, mildly painful, we can actually endure so much if we do it mindfully, with proper attention, honoring the body process, the field of energy, the way the mind rests in the present moment. Bringing all these factors together, these are some of the factors of enlightenment. The Buddha says, the wise person does not shake in adversity. We should hasten to support ourselves in that which is not sorrowful. And it's just one breath, one intention, knowing this is heavy kama, a heavy burden. But with this burden, I can breathe one more breath. I can walk one more step. I can gladden my features while I do that. I can be attentive to the strength that I do have to be present, not to give in, not to be a slave to these unskillful mental formations. Instead of giving in, we refuse to give in. Just like the fire on the mountain at Abhayagiri, the mountain refused to burn. We can be like that. We refuse to burn in our unwholesome mind states, no matter how intense or how oppressive. But we have to understand the strength of mind that we have, the strength of awareness, and not give it up to Mara, not just throw it away on these conditions that happen to everyone. Because in fact, the whole reason that we're here on this planet is to conquer this ignorance in the mind. We cannot be victorious over the kama of the body, which is to get old, to get sick, to die, to be destroyed, to lose everything that we have, our dearest and our nearest. They're all going to disappear. Everyone that's in this room is going to disappear in 1 decade, 2 decades, 3 or 4 days, or whenever. We're all disappearing. But the intention to free the mind has to be developed and treasured. We treasure it by remembering it. We embolden ourselves by practicing it. And we free ourselves by bringing it to its complete fruition. That's the path. That's what we're here for. By breaking it up into seeing this dragon is not real. It's only an assembly of many parts. So in the same way, by breathing into that feeling and focusing on body sensation, makes it a field of energy that Mara cannot overcome. It cannot cover that vastness of consciousness. If we can eventually bring it into the vastness of consciousness, then we really can vanquish it. That takes a bit more practice. But if we make a determination for the next hour, I'm just going to spread loving kindness to myself and anyone that comes in my energy field. And we practice. Now I can be kind, gentle, and support what's going on here. Sometimes when we're very tired and stressed, it's pretty hard to be kind and gentle. But we can be kind to anyone if we practice. It just takes practice. And that's what we really need.